You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week, folks. It's me, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. This is episode 154. Yes, indeed, 154 episodes here from Bogota, from Mompós, from Santa Marta, from everywhere else that I have filed, even once from Cusco, I believe. But anyway, no, we're back. And yes, episode 154, we'll be speaking to Natalie Riedman, who is in Cartagena, and we'll be talking about her foundation called La Vecina, which runs in La Boquilla, a more humble area of Cartagena, far from the walled city. So very exciting to hear about another person doing something fantastic in Colombia and, you know, sharing with us an enthusiasm that I hope is infectious for the rest of you out there listening to Columbia Calling, because that's the idea here, is that we keep trying to tell you the real stories in Colombia. Yes, good stories, bad stories, but the real stories. And of course, we keep moving on forwards. The campaign for yes or no in the plebiscite referendum is motoring forwards. Both sides are ramping up their vernacular, let's say. And it's interesting. It's an interesting time to be here in Colombia. The press is full of the plebiscite. Remember that to approve the referendum on the peace agreement with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia to bring to an end 52 years of conflict with this guerrilla group, the government requires only 13% of the registered voting public. So that's around 4.4 million people. So we'll be watching this on October the 2nd. We'll be watching very closely. Before then, I've got a few travel plans on. You know, I've got to go here and there on various guiding gigs. But then after that, should my wife permit me, I will be down in the southern jungles, the southern savannas of Colombia, attending the FARC's 10th conference at some base down there with the rest of the press. And I hope to do a podcast from there about the FARC rebel camp. So spending time in a rebel camp in the Llanos de Yari near to San Vicente de Caiwan, which was the former zone of distension, the demilitarized zone that Andrés Pastrana gave up to the FARC between sort of 98 and 2002 as an area for peace negotiations, which were farcical in that period of time. Of course, that gave light to our two terms of President Uribe, and then, of course, Santos. So it's all connected. Everything is connected. It's a very interesting time, not without its concerns at the moment. But yes, keep listening in, because I really hope that around 156 or 157, I have a podcast for you coming to you live from the Llanos de Yari with maybe with a gorilla. Maybe not, or maybe just there observing. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Very interesting times indeed. This is Columbia Calling. Please remember, if you want to get in touch, that's columbiacalling@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. I answer all emails. It's a great pleasure. And we'll be shortly back with Natalie Friedman. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota, Colombia. I'm sitting in my patio, so if you hear the birds behind me, it's a high altitude copetones in my garden. My dog is beside me, as some of you know. He likes to accompany me in these interviews, so anything is possible. But my very, very special guest on this episode, 154, is in Cartagena today, and I'd like to give a special shout out to Barbara Smalley, who's been recommending people left, right, and center for the show, and of course that's been incredibly helpful, and put me in touch with Natalie Riedman, who is a Dutch citizen, and she's there in Cartagena, and she has her own foundation called La Vecina. So welcome on the show.
La vecina means the neighbor.
Yeah.
And that's the idea behind the the neighbor is that they we are always there, open to help. People can knock on our door, and we're there for the community. My foundation is situated in La Boquilla. Uh-huh. La Boquilla is an area of Cartagena, north of Cartagena, actually. It has like two parts. You have like the rich part where all the hotels are and the apartments. And then all of a sudden it changes, and then you get like the start of a slum, to say it. And it's the further you go north, the more, the worse it gets. So we are at the far end of the beach, at the end where the... it's called La Boquilla. La Boquilla means the mouth. Mm. The water, the inner lake of Cartagena is watering out more or less in the sea, and that's where we are. So in our neighborhood, you have a lot of poor people. It's what they call here Estrato Uno. Uh-huh. So what we provide for the children is we have a foundation, yeah. And the major activity of the foundation is the school. So incredible. We have a primary school from kids more or less 4 to 11, 12 years old.
Amazing, amazing. Let's wind back though for this, Natalie. How is it that you, blonde, blue-eyed Dutch lady, ended up in La Boquilla or in Cartagena?
Yeah, that's a story I will tell you. The first time I came to Colombia was for my thesis, actually. Okay. I'm an environmental engineer. Nice. And I did my thesis in Bogota. And at the end of that period, I had holiday for 2 weeks and I went to Cartagena because all the Colombians said, you can't miss Cartagena. So I went there. But at that time, that was in 97, there were a lot of street children.
Yeah.
So... my idea was to work there and to protect nature, but then I saw the kids and I thought, well, maybe we should start here first. Yeah. So that was actually kind of quite a turning point in my life because I decided I wanted to do something. So I went back to Holland, finished university. I worked 2 years in a kindergarten in Holland to get some experience with kids. And then I did another master's in international development.
Wow.
To learn how to raise funds and how to write projects. And then I founded La Vecina in Holland and La Vecina in, after that, in Colombia. Uh-huh. And the idea of La Vecina Holland is that they're only there to raise funds, send it to Colombia, and here I'm the one managing the project.
That sounds very organized. But what amazes me is that you went for 2 weeks to Cartagena and then basically the idea came to you. You said, I've got to do this. I've got to intervene. I've got to help all of these street kids. I mean, it must have been something incredibly emotional for you to have made that change in your life.
Yeah, well, it has to do also with my past because to tell it really quick, I lost my parents when I was young and I had been on a boarding school. And what my dream always was to provide like a house, a safe place for children. And when I saw these kids in the streets, that's what occurred to my mind, like, this is what I want to do. But I always said I will do it when I'm old. But when I saw that, I was like, I'm going to do it now.
Wow, it's a tragic story, but that has turned into something incredibly positive in Cartagena. So we are amazed at this. And of course, so basically the children of La Boquilla are your children. It's your family.
Well, yeah, more or less. the good thing is that the children have still parents. So after school, they all go home. But in the school, we're like a family and that's where they feel safe.
Tell me a little bit about the school. I mean, you set it up. You've got La Vecina in Holland, which is sort of like the fundraising center.
Yeah.
I imagine there's all sorts of benefits as well, legal benefits of not having it in Colombia. Let's not talk about that, but let's just keep that to one side. So you decided that they needed a school. The children needed a school in this area. Was there no school there beforehand?
Yes, there is a public school, but the fact is that in Colombia there are actually 3 million children who don't have a space in school. Mm-hmm. So in the area you see that there are a lot of kids at that time were not going to school. So what we offered was extra place in school.
Uh-huh. And now what are these kids? I mean, it sounds like a naive question. If they're not going to school, are they being sent out to work?
Some of them are, but some of them just hang around in the street. So, yeah, we just want them to go to school.
Yeah, I understand that. No, I understand that. And of course, if they're in the streets, they're prone to all dangers. It's, I imagine, abuse, prostitution, begging, everything you can imagine.
Exactly, exactly.
And so, yeah. How many children do you look after in this school? How many children do you cater for?
At the moment, we have 115 children.
Wow.
And we've been there already now for 9 years. So the first two groups already actually finished in our primary school. And we're still helping them. What we do is they go to a high school in another neighborhood because the public school is... We want them to have good quality education, so they go to another school. And we have a bus, and the bus brings them to that school. And in the afternoon, they come back, and they have help with their homework.
And these are particularly at-risk children, I imagine, then. At very, sort of, let's say, a difficult situation economically.
Yes. Okay. All the, like we say, the neighborhood is poor.
Yeah.
And all the kids who come to our school are poor children.
And so one of the key things there, and one of the things that you mentioned that I like the most, is that you have a bus that picks them up and a bus that takes them back. Because, of course, travel expenses eat a massive amount of anyone's, let's say, income or of their any money. I mean, you know, if you didn't have that, I doubt the kids would come, really, you know, or fewer would come.
Yeah, well, this is only the part of the high school who go with the bus. The normal kids, they just walk to school.
Okay.
They walk or they come with a bike. But for those kids who go to the high school, normally they wouldn't be able to pay it. Or they would go to the normal school, but then they end up in classrooms with 40 children and, you know,
So so you have this school, you have 150 children there, you've been at it for 9 years, but when the children finish the school, it's not as if you say, right, you're done, go. You're still looking after them, you're still looking out for them.
Yeah, exactly, okay. Exactly. Yeah.
And what kind of educational practices do you have there at La Vecina School in La Boquilla?
Well, of course, we follow all the rules of the Colombian law. We give like the normal Colombian education.
Yeah.
But what we do extra is the kids have or classes in the morning or in the afternoon. But we do a lot of extracurriculum activities, so to say. So one of them is actually learning English.
Yeah.
The oldest groups, they learn, they get 5 hours a week of English.
Wow.
They also get music and dance classes.
Uh-huh.
So that's also extra. And we have a lot of other projects, which not exactly the kids from the school, but they're for kids from the neighborhood. For instance, we have a football project. And we do a lot of other projects.
I think it's very important. I mean, this activity and you know, to involve so many children to be involved in their lives and in the families. When you started in La Boquilla, how was your reception? How did people, did they kind of look at you as the crazy gringa? Because of course you're white and you're blonde, you're a gringa. Whether you like it or not. But did they look at you like some crazy person coming in? Or did they, take to you immediately?
No, in the beginning it was more like, okay, this girl is coming, she's going to go away like in 3 months. But I stayed and every year we were growing like little by little. And they saw the results in their children. So everybody was really positive. And now actually people are like almost fighting to get their kids in our school. Well, not fighting, but they're like in line to get their kids in our school.
Well, it must be, you know, you think about it, it's the best school in the area. Everybody wants to get on the waiting list.
Yeah, that's true. So
you don't have a policy of like interviewing the parents like at the private schools and stuff.
Yeah, we do now, actually, okay. Because in the beginning we could just put all the kids in the school, but then we did like first come, first serve.
Yeah.
But now there's so many, we have to do like interviews.
Wow.
So we work with the parents who like most dedicated to help the children, most compromised parents.
That sounds very interesting indeed, because I know in some of the private schools in Bogota, parents have to go to an interview, but it's largely a financial thing, and to see if they're of the type of class that these private schools want them, you know, like the upper class in England or wherever else. And if the parents ask too many questions, their child is turned away from the school.
Because
it's the school doing them a favor, not them doing a school a favor by looking for it. It's very interesting. It's reversed to the way I understand schooling should be. But, you're in a different situation. As we wind down this first segment of the show, explain to my listeners, because a lot of people who listen to this show have been to Colombia or are considering coming to Colombia, or indeed are Colombians overseas. But explain to us a little bit what is Estrato Uno, the economic bracket that we group, let's say, a more humble community into.
Yeah, well, the society is divided in like six estratos, so like six levels. And according to where you live, that's has like a level, to say it like that.
Yeah.
So we are in one, and the six is like the highest.
Okay.
The good thing about this system is, like, when you're poor, then almost the rich people pay for the expenses of electricity and water, because that's the way how it's divided. Mm-hmm. So poor people have little electricity bill and little water, because compared to the rich, they can afford it.
Yeah.
So that's more or less how to explain it.
And it's government subsidies, the rich subsidize, the electricity and water. But I would imagine a lot of these places don't have access to running fresh water in Estrato 1. Maybe they have to go to a tap somewhere, or I imagine there are health issues in these barrios, very much like dengue, Zika, chikungunya, all of this.
Yeah, but the water thing is actually a thing, because where I started, there we had little access to water. We still have little access to water, because we are on, like to say, the end of the pipeline of the water, and all the apartments and hotels are using them. So in the day we don't have water. So we actually collect water in a big tank during the night, and then we pump it to the roof in the
You have what they call the motobomba to pump it up. So I have this in my house in Mompos too. I have it in my place.
And the thing is, where we also started there, you didn't have like alcantarilla, like the sewage.
Yeah.
Thank God we are now where we are now. We are a little bit closer to the higher building, so now we have sewage. But that doesn't mean it works.
No, I mean, when you're at the end of the line, you're the last thing to be thought about, and it's Strato 1, so it doesn't represent any tax income. It doesn't represent... It's a tough one. Very interesting talking to you, Natalie. Thank you for agreeing to be on this episode of Colombia Calling. Let's say your website is lavecina.org. If people want to find out more about the foundation there in Cartagena, in La Boquilla, which is a very interesting and a different part of Cartagena, not just the walled city. It's beyond there. It represents something else. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Natalie talking further about La Vecina, La Boquilla, and how you guys out there can potentially help this this foundation continue, from year to year. I mean, Natalie, was it 1997 you said you were doing your thesis?
Exactly.
I mean, something bit you. You're now, you're pretty much, I bet you're a Colombian citizen now. So, pretty amazing. So we'll take a short break, and we'll be back talking further about this amazing story going on in Cartagena. So thank you for listening. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McColl. We've been talking to Natalie Rudman, who is in Cartagena at the moment. I'm in Bogota, but Natalie is in Cartagena. She's a Dutch citizen who has made Colombia her home. I mean, that's the truth of it. We finished on the point in this last segment that you were doing your thesis in 1997 in Bogota. You came to Cartagena, and in a two-week trip, you were bitten by something left a mark on you, and you had to come back. You did a master's to improve your ability to be able to raise money and set up an international foundation. I mean, it all seems to point towards this. So you've come back to Cartagena, you have this foundation, La Boquilla, La Vecina in La Boquilla, there we go. And people can look that up at lavecina.org, it says lavecina.org. And you look after 150 children. I mean, it's amazing. This is a really a good news story coming out of Colombia. You're changing lives.
Yes.
But tell me a little bit about your day-to-day routine there in La Boquilla then, because it's got to be tough, and I'm sure it's not the same every day.
No. Every day is another day, especially in Colombia. My day-to-day, well, I'm managing the foundation. So, there's always things happening in a way that there's no water or there's no electricity or there's no internet. So that's one of the challenges every day. If everything is working well, I'm doing the managing of personnel, the financial part, but also the public relations with within Colombia, but also with Holland, mm-hmm. because the majority of the money and donations comes from Holland, so I have to be in contact with them. I talk with them on Skype or just making newsletters, putting posts on Facebook and everything, so to keep everybody informed.
It's very tough, but you must have some interaction with the children too.
Yes, of course. Not that much as I wish, because I have a really busy job. But I also talk, for instance, with the psychologist about the cases of children who have problems or have been abused or stuff like that. So in that sense, I'm up to date to all the kids.
So I've got this image now, you know, of La Boquilla, which I know a little bit, and I know there's a couple of outfitters who are doing tourism out there, local people doing canoe trips out in the mangrove swamps of La Boquilla and so on. But I've got this image of those mega constructions, as you leave Cartagena going out to Boquilla, 20 stories, 30 stories high, that no one can pay for. I think that they're all money laundering. You probably can't tell me because you'd get in trouble. So I think there's a lot of money laundering going on. I think there's a lot of Venezuelan money in there too, because they're getting out of Venezuela. And then at the end of the line, I'm seeing this lovely, you know, Dutch-funded school. That's what I'm imagining. But it's got to be tough every day, passing all of that money and all of that opulence, and then getting there. So I imagine, if I'm putting it right, and most of your kids, if not all of them, are let's say Afro-Colombian,
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So
yeah.
So the working class, downtrodden, overlooked people, not the upper class Europeans from the center, who have the big houses in the walled city or anything like that. You're looking at the people who are really overlooked in Cartagena, but are the majority.
Yeah. No, all the kids are, the majority of the kids, let's say 90% is Afro-Colombian.
Yeah.
And of course, La Boquilla is still a fishing village.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, every time there's less fish, so people are looking for other jobs. But this is low
income.
Neighborhoods, yeah. Very low income neighborhoods.
The families, if they're not fishing, what kind of other jobs would they do?
What they do is they work in construction, but that's most of the time only for a few months.
Yeah.
Or they work motor taxis.
Yeah.
So they a lot of them don't have a job.
Yes,
so.
This would be very hard to sustain a family like this. What can we say are the principal threats to children growing up in La Boquilla in the situation in which you are working?
Well, all the things which has to do with the slum, let's say violence, abuse, sexual abuse, parents who are drinking drugs.
Are there gang problems in La Boquilla?
Yeah, also we also actually work with some kids who are part of a gang, and we try to talk with them, give them workshops, and try to find ways that they can have a goal in their life. So we offer them
A safe place, alternatives, a way out. But have you found this to be successful, or is it very hard?
It's hard because, we do these things, but the environment or the community is not changing.
Yeah.
But at least giving them a purpose in life is already something. And that's the same, for instance, what we do with our football project. Just the fact that they're part of a football team gives them a purpose in life. And that's already so important.
Yeah, it's the identity, isn't it? As well as belonging to something. If you're in a family that takes no interest or can't take an interest, you I guess you float, don't you? Until someone else pays an interest, maybe a gang or something else. Drugs, oh, I don't even want to think about it. I don't even want to think about the risks out there. But can you share with us any stories, any sort of personal stories or stories about any children, of course not naming names or anything, that have really impacted you?
Yeah, of course. What the most ever impacted me was one of the kids, oldest kids, a boy actually, came to us and he said, we have a psychologist. And he said, no, I want to talk to Natalie, to the directora, to say it like that. And I was like, wow, normally never kids ask that.
Yeah.
So I was there with the psychologist and we talked to him and he said, well, what's wrong? And then he just lifted his shirt and he showed his back and it was completely covered with black stains because he was beaten by his father. And then I was like, wow, I just had to like swallow my tears because that's just devastating. The good thing is that in one way I was like, why did he tell me? But on the other way, it was so good because he felt that we were the only one he could trust and that we could help him. And actually we did. The situation now is 100% different. His father is in therapy. We talked with the family. His little brother, who also didn't go to school, is now going to school. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's so good that he asked for help and that we could help him with the situation.
I mean, it's incredible that he picked you as the person, isn't it? I mean, he said, yeah, I want to speak to the directora, I want to speak to Natalie. And I mean, you said you had to sort of choke back your tears, but I mean, it must have really affected you. I mean, for you to say this now, I mean, how many years ago did this happen?
That was like 4 years ago.
I mean, and it's still very present. It's still, you can still see the bruising and unbelievable. Unbelievable this. And of course, so the father's in therapy, you said, the children are safe and they're going to school. Oh, you've changed lives.
Exactly.
Incredible. So, you know, basically the lavecina.org is an intervention. It's an alternative. It's obviously a highly sought after school now in La Orquilla. How can people outside of Colombia or even in Colombia help you? I mean, do you take volunteers?
Yes, of course. We take volunteers. The only thing I have to say, we work with volunteers who stay at least 3 months because otherwise it's too much going up and down from other people. So our minimum is 3 months, but we're really happy with volunteers. Mm-hmm. And of course, people who want to donate, like in species or in money, we are always happy with that.
Yeah.
And and if you have any connections or you don't know any funds, please bring them in contact with me.
Send
me an email.
Now, is there a fundraising, let's say, link on your website?
Yes.
You can do it by PayPal.
In Colombia, we have a link to the bank and we have a special number. If we even now have the possibility for people to become a monthly donator automatically. Wow. Also, we have actually a foundation in the States. And of course, we have the foundation in Holland. So there are all different ways you can help us.
Okay, so there's no excuse, listeners. There's no excuse. There's every way of doing it. But if you want, how many volunteers do you normally take? Let's say we're in the European North American summer season. And so people have some free time. How many volunteers do you normally get?
Well, we have around two or three
at
the same time because they are the ones who are giving the English classes.
Yeah.
And some of them give sports or they help me actually with, for instance, coordinating the volunteers and helping me with other stuff like Facebook and websites.
And these are ordinarily Dutch volunteers or from all over the place?
No, all over the world. They come from everywhere, from Finland to the States to even Peru. I have a girl now from Peru.
Wow.
So,
you know, I mean, very interesting that. So States, Finland, Peru, but they're expected to find their own place to live. Organize themselves.
We don't pay it, but we always help with them. And when they're in the foundation, they can lunch there, and we pay for the transport. But the where they stay, that's we help. We have contacts. So
good families where they can stay and everything.
Exactly.
So very, you know, you're not dropping them in the deep end. All right, so go to La Boquilla, find a place, and then we'll see you tomorrow. I volunteered in Ukraine in 1995. I was picked up at the airport in Kiev by nobody who spoke any English. I spoke no Russian or Ukrainian. And they just drove me to an apartment where there was nobody. and left me there. I guess what they were saying to me back then was, oh, you know, someone will be here in a few hours, because I had no idea. And so I fell asleep on the sofa. I mean, I guess I was so naive and everything. This poor lady, who was someone's mother, just came back to see this, you know, 6'2" English guy sleeping on her sofa. I mean, she was quite shocked, but I mean, that was a real baptism of fire. I mean, it really was. You did, to not have that, you know, just at least a little bit of organization behind it.
Yeah.
It was
No. We do help them, and we have always contact with them. We start most of the time with email contact and Skype with them, and it's all more easier than at that time.
Yeah, we didn't even have internet back then. I mean, that's
exactly
the scary story people can't imagine. So people can help that way. We've talked about that, about volunteering. But so, I mean, you know, and you've got a considerable staff. You've employed local people. Tell us about a little bit about who you've employed, how many people you have.
Well, all the staff is Colombian. I'm the only Dutch one, and we actually work also with people from the neighborhood. So we have the staff from the kitchen, we have the teachers, we have the psychologists, we have the football trainer, the music and dance teachers, and so on. Yeah, we a total now 20 people, which a lot of them are part-time, of course.
That's a big amount of staff. So not only are you giving, schooling for 150 children, you're probably one of the top employers in La Boquilla.
I'm sure
you are, you know. As I said, as we mentioned in that first section, you said, oh, they thought, oh, this lady will come, do some stuff, and then leave. You haven't left, you're still there. How, when you go walk through La Boquilla, because I imagine you are known by everybody, how is it? How do people come out of their houses to say hello? Does everyone share a kind word? Or, I mean, what kind of reception do you get?
No, well, people, of course, they know me, or they all say La Vecina, but they're really, really, like, not giving that much compliments, like, to say it in public. But the nice thing was, I was on television for the Colombian television, and then they interviewed some people, and they said, no, then you hear how happy they were with La Vecina, but they would never say it, like, in my face. Yeah. But by that program, I was really flattered, because they were all so nice, and they were all talking so lovely about me.
But I don't like to generalize greatly, but I think it's a Colombian thing to not say it to your face. I really do.
It is.
And much sooner say it to someone else elsewhere. It almost makes it like gossip, you know, chisme.
Yeah, exactly. But they really appreciate it. And especially you can see that everybody wants their child in their school. And that's a big compliment.
It's amazing. It's an amazing thing. Now, I remember, I moved to Colombia to live full time in 2007, so you outdate me by a long time. But I was here.
I started in 2007.
Okay.
Because the first time I went was in 97.
Okay.
Then it took me time, of course, to organize. We next year we're gonna celebrate our 10th anniversary.
No way. What month?
March, the 5th of March.
Okay, so I'm February. Okay, there we go. But very cool, 10 years. But you, I mean, you do outdate me, really. But, I was here, and I did visit Colombia in 97, 98. It is a different country altogether. But when I moved here in 2007, there was a mayor, a lady mayor, I think, of Cartagena, who was the one who said that there was no poverty in Cartagena. I mean, that was her famous declaration. And, I mean, how did you feel when you heard something like that, having seen what you've seen and having lived what you've lived?
Well, I always say 80% of Cartagena is poor. Yeah. So that says it all.
I would say so too, because beyond the Ciudad Amurallada, the walled city, and of course Manga and the nicer areas, I mean, what people responded to that mayoress, I remember, they said, no, there's no poverty, there's misery. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, it's really strong. And when you get out to some of these areas in Cartagena, not just La Boquilla near to the stadium or the markets, it's a tough life out there. I mean, it's really, the existence is no fun at all. So, I mean, but you deal exclusively with La Boquilla. You found this place because you wanted to deal exclusively with that. Well, just remind me, how young are the youngest children who get involved in your school?
They we started 4 years old, so they come to preschool.
So I mean, you really are, so you're almost like a creche for children. I mean, so the parents can go off to work.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's young. I mean, that's young. I mean, you have to have training. People have to have training to be able to work with children like that.
Yeah, of course. We have all personnel who's has their license to teaching everything, of course.
I mean, amazing. And so then they finish at 18. And you know, and so the English classes have given the children hope in working in other fields, more not the traditional fields, I suppose, because it's Cartagena, everyone's talking always about tourism, but are they discussing other opportunities as well?
Well, I think the nice part of English is of course that Cartagena is a tourist city, so it can really help them in their future lives. Yeah. But also it helps them to see that there's more than just La Boquilla.
Yeah.
I mean, even people visiting us, people come and talk to them in English, even when they're from Finland or from other countries. It kind of broadens their life.
Yeah.
So what we also try to do for the children is to show, sometimes we visit the center or other places to see that there's more than La Boquilla and that there's more possible in life. And if they want to, they have... There are opportunities.
Yeah. That's really interesting because I imagine a lot of these children haven't seen the Centro.
No. Yeah, now they did. Yeah, now they do. But when I just started, we left with some children. We went to the zoo in Barranquilla, and they were like, that was like another world. I mean, yeah.
Well, I can only imagine. I love the zoo, but I mean, I can only imagine if you've never even like left La Boquilla or Cartagena. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
That was like a world trip for them.
That's
and
wonderful.
And the funny thing of that time, what I remember is we went to the zoo and the kids, a few kids said, yeah, we saw giraffes. But in the whole zoo, there weren't giraffes. But just their fantasy went wild with all the animals. So that was really lovely.
Oh, but it's nice. That's the creativity that comes with, you know, with these kind of trips. I mean, it's really great. That's fascinating that you can do those sort of trips. Are there any, do you have any plans of expanding La Vecina, getting bigger? Is there going to be a La Vecina University?
Oh, no, we first have to do the high school. But, I always say my limit is money. So if I have more money, I will do more. And parents asking me if I'm starting that at the high school, and I'm like, that's another project and a lot of money. But if I had the money, I would do it.
Okay.
So, I would love to grow because there's so much to do. And we're still not finished in La Boquilla. I'm not even looking at other places to go. Just La Boquilla, there's a lot to do.
Yeah. Can I ask? I don't know if you can answer this question, but do you have a figure in your mind how much it costs to run the school per year or per month? Is there one you can tell me, or is that completely confidential?
We have, of course, we have our budget, but the budget is like the school and all the other projects. Our budget this year is 200,000 euros a year.
In truth, you know, as we look at it, if we, you know, we're multinationals, or it's not a lot of money, but in La Boquilla, that's a lot of money. I mean, this is in Colombia, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money for me as a freelance journalist, but it's a lot of money. But it goes a long way in La Boquilla, 200,000 euros. And so listen.
Yeah, and exactly. If you see what we do, I mean, we have 115 kids going to school. We have 20 kids going to high school. We have like five other projects. We have 20 people staff, and we do it all from just this money. And then if you calculate, it's not that much money.
No, it's not that much money at all. I'm thinking about it, looking at the figures that I've been noting down since we started talking. I think it's incredible that it's testament to your hard work and discipline, I have to say, because it's discipline to be able to make that budget each year. So anyone out there listening, and you've got a couple of euros or a couple of 100 euros or even more, you know where to put it. You know. I know that people nowadays, instead of giving gifts, sometimes give money to charity in the name of other people. That's a nice way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
I would say La Vecina is worth giving money to. It sounds to me like you're doing a really incredible job. I urge people to go to Cartagena, get to know the city, but also get to know the surroundings. If you can go out and see La Vecina, La Boquilla, because there are tours in La Boquilla, and the money does go directly to the community. And that's important, exactly. Especially in Cartagena, where there are so many big enterprises who control a lot of the tourism and a lot of the incomes. So check out the website, lavecina.org. I've been talking to Natalie Reitman, who's a Dutch citizen in Cartagena. It's been really incredible. Is there anything, any last message you want to share with the listeners of Columbia Calling?
Well, just one for people to know that in Holland, we only work with volunteers. We don't have an office. So all the money people donate goes straight to Colombia. And we are happy with even like €1. We're happy with everything.
I think that's very cool. And I know that my listeners are pleased to hear that, you know, none of the money is diverted in Holland to pay for staff there. It's purely volunteers and everything goes to Colombia. I mean, that's fantastic. Check out lavecina.org. Natalie, thank you so much. Next time in Cartagena, I'm going to try and come and see what you're doing. And if not, come down to Montpos or bring your kids on a field trip.
Yeah. Everybody who wants to visit, just give me an email and we can coordinate it and you're welcome to visit.
All right. Thank you so much. This has been episode 154 of Columbia Calling. I know you've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed chatting to Natalie. It's been really enlightening, very interesting, very informative. So thank you for listening. I'm signing off. Continue to listen because we'll have another interesting interviewee on the show next week. So thank you again. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Columbia Calling.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Okay, so why do people love my Total Body Bar workouts? Because they work. My clients get an amazing workout and great results. I'm Andrew Rogers, professional dancer and trainer, and my Extend Bar classes are fun, only 30 minutes, and proven to help you get sculpted, lean, and strong. And right now, you can stream my Extend Bar classes for free on the Beachbody On Demand app. See how effective these workouts truly are. Start for free today at beachbody.com.